Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Sasha Pfeiffer.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Earlier today, I Googled this question. Does music make you smarter? The very first response came up from a musical instrument store that claimed there's a lot of evidence that playing an instrument is good for your brain. It went on to say children who play in bands and orchestras get better grades. And research suggests that exposure to music positively affects a child's reading age, IQ, and brain development.
In other words, the clear message is that yes, music makes you smarter. But even though many people believe that, our next guest says there's no evidence it's true. No scientific or medical research showing that musical training is linked to cognitive benefits. In fact, he's conducted one of the few and most recent studies looking into whether music boosts brain power.
But let's be clear. Nobody can dispute that music has its own intrinsic value. As Aristotle wrote, music makes the hearts of men glad. So music is good. Music is important, even essential for many of us. But the research just doesn't allow us to jump from that to the conclusion that music makes us smarter. So joining us now to talk a lot more about this is Samuel Mayer. He's a doctoral student at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. And Sam Mayer, welcome to the program. Great to have you.
Hi, thanks for having me on the show. And thanks on behalf of my colleagues on this paper, Adina Schachner, Rachel Katz, and Elizabeth Spelke.
All right, good. Well, we're glad to have their names included here as well. I really want to talk to you in some depth about your research. But first, let's dispense with something that we've all heard something about along the way called the Mozart effect, which sort of helps cement the idea in a lot of people's heads that music does make us smarter. So remind us, and I know your study wasn't about the Mozart effect, but first remind us what it is.
So there's a good bit of history that's sort of worth getting on the table here. The Mozart effect was a term not coined by the scientific community, but coined by the Los Angeles Times about a scientific paper in the journal Nature in 1993. That's thing number one. Thing number two is that the Mozart effect study, the one that term refers to, really didn't have anything to do at all with music instruction. It had to do with listening to music. So it was a study about adult skills on a spatial task, a small portion of an intelligence test, and it showed that after they had listened to a few minutes of a Mozart sonata, they performed a little bit better. Turned out that this really had nothing to do with Mozart or any particular kind of music in general. The effect was really that people who are relaxed and happy do better on tests. And a psychologist named Glenn Schellenberg at the up in Toronto showed conclusively that really this was just an artifact of mood.
An artifact of mood. But of course, it really became a thing. And you had Baby Mozart, which was for sale. You had the governor of Georgia handing out CDs to every newborn baby. I mean, it sort of took on its own kind of steam.
It took off like crazy. And Glenn Schellenberg has actually written a little bit about why he thinks that might be. He's talked about how, you know, everybody's looking for sort of a silver bullet for education, and you know, it would be nice to have a simple solution that music might do all of these wonderful things, other than the fact that it does great things for children's music abilities. But the important distinction to make between the music makes you smarter stuff and the Mozart effect stuff is that the Mozart effect studies had to do with listening to music, and the question of whether music lessons make children smarter is not about listening; it's about music instruction. It's about attending lessons.
All right. Well, we're going to talk about that and talk about your study, which is really interesting. I want to invite listeners to get involved in this conversation. Listeners, what's your view about music and intelligence? We're going to be talking about the lack of evidence that links music with improved cognitive ability. Does that surprise you? And just because it hasn't been proven doesn't mean it isn't so. So what's your view about this? Do you have a hunch or even anecdotal evidence that music might make us smarter? Give us a call with your comments and questions at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. So Sam Mayer, okay, so we've dispensed with the Mozart effect, but before we get to the particulars of your research, tell us what we actually know about this link between music and cognition. I mean, how much empirical research was out there before you did your tests?
So it's important here to distinguish between two different types of research that happen in cognitive science and education. There are studies that are correlational studies in which you take a group of people who have one characteristic and compare them to a group of people who either don't have that characteristic or who have something else. So in this case, you could take a group of musicians and compare them to a group of non-musicians. That's called a correlational study. That's not what we did. We did what are called randomized controlled trials. And the important distinction to make between these two is that if you want to show cause and effect in a scientific study, you can't rely only on correlational evidence. Now, there are many, many correlational studies that show that if you compare musicians to non-musicians, they do have higher cognitive skills. Children who participate in music lessons do tend to do a little bit better in school than others. There's a lot of correlational evidence for that. But the problem is that doesn't say for sure that music makes children smarter. In fact, it doesn't tell us anything about a causal link. It's entirely plausible that there's a third variable that's what we call a lurking variable that causes both of those things. For instance, in order to participate in music lessons, children need to be in an environment in which they can get access to music lessons. Those environments typically are higher socioeconomic areas, children have to have parents that might be encouraging them to do that. Those parents might be the same parents who are encouraging their children to read. The example that I often use in the intro statistics class that I teach is you could really take any effect. Let's say you take a group of musicians and compare them to non-musicians, and the musicians eat more pizza than the non-musicians. It would be a very big mistake to say, studying music makes you eat more pizza. Mm-hmm. It's entirely possible that musicians go to areas where there are more pizzas. It's impossible that playing music in bars makes you more likely to buy a pizza.
All right.
You need to do what's called a randomized trial to show this effect.
To make this distinction between cause and correlation.
Exactly. Right. Okay. Exactly. In terms of the literature that has looked at causal outcomes, so these randomized trials, there have actually only been 5 randomized trials published. And what was really surprising to us when we sort of set out to review the literature in preparation to write up our findings was that even though there have been 5, which is a pretty small number to begin with, the results from those 5 are so far from conclusive. Only one of them has a sort of unambiguously positive effect. And that effect is so small that I think a lot of people would hear it and think, well, okay, this isn't even that big a deal. The effect in that study was after a year of piano or voice lessons, children's increases in IQ over the course of the year were 2.7 points higher than a comparison or control group. Now, 2.7 IQ points, just to give you a frame of reference, is a pretty small amount on a test where scores typically range from about 70 to 100 or 130. Mm. So it's a very small effect.
And of the 5, just to be clear, that was the only test that showed any possible causal effect.
So those 5 studies are all set up to detect causal effects.
Right.
There are other small effects within those 5 studies. That's the only one that has an unambiguous overall positive effect. So for instance, there's another study from 1999 that showed after 2 years of piano lessons, a positive improvement on a general cognitive test and a spatial test, but that effect wasn't there after 1 year of lessons and wasn't there after 3 years of lessons.
Okay.
So that's a pretty typical example of sort of the ambiguous nature of these findings.
Okay. So we have these 5 tests, no sort of clear conclusion about a causal relationship here. What was the big question that you wanted to answer with your 2 studies?
So we decided to look at the general question of music, of whether music makes children smarter, by doing randomized trials with 2 sort of new features. Feature number 1 is that we wanted to work with the youngest end of the age range that you can test cognitive skills in a reliable fashion, which are preschoolers. And it's a little bit tough to get 4-year-olds to play a lot of violin or do instrumental lessons. So we decided to use a different type of music training that's very popular in the world. It's parent-child music enrichment classes. So these are the type of class where the parents participate in the class. They learn repertoire to sing with their children. They play simple instruments. And the idea of all of this, of the training, is to get parents and children to interact musically at home so that music becomes a more prominent part of their lives. So that was one thing that we did differently than the previous studies, was the type of music training. The other thing that was different is how we assessed their cognitive skills. So most of the other randomized trials on the topic have used intelligence tests, which measure general intelligence. We figured that maybe one reason that the previous results had been inconsistent was that maybe these intelligence tests were not sensitive enough to detect an effect that was going on. So we used specific tests of four areas of cognition. We looked at these distinct areas of linguistic development, receptive vocabulary, mathematical development, which was a test of the approximate number system, and two areas of spatial cognition, a visual form analysis task and a symbolic navigation task. And we can talk more about how those work if you'd like.
And so what did you find? So, and I know you went through sort of two tests with two different populations of research subjects. What did you find?
Right. So we ran our first randomized trial, which was the smaller of the two, with 29 preschoolers who were randomly assigned to music classes or to visual arts classes. And after 6 weeks of those classes, so a fairly short period of music training, we found comparable results in the children in both groups on the linguistic tests. So the receptive vocabularies were comparable, comparable results on the numerical discrimination task, on the early mathematics skills, and slight, sort of modest effects in the spatial domain, actually in different directions. So the music group was a little bit better on one, and the visual arts group was a little bit better on the other. But this randomized trial was quite small. This was only 29 children. So we immediately started work on a replication. So replication is really important in cognitive science and education. The sort of gold standard for finding out if something that you've shown is really true is to show it again. So in our second randomized trial, we did a larger study. We had 45 preschool children and their parents. We did exactly the same music training. There was no visual arts group in this one. We decided to compare these kids to a no treatment control, so no classes at all. And when we finished the assessments in that randomized trial, the results were pretty unambiguously negative. We really found no evidence whatsoever in that second trial for any benefits for the music group on any of these four assessments. And then importantly, because we did the same music training in both randomized trials, that justifies a comparison overall with the whole cohort of 74 children. And there again, when we compare the music-trained children to either the visual arts trained children or the no-treatment control group, we really see no evidence for any effect here.
It's really interesting. And I want to be clear about what this means. And you've been very clear about responding to some of the coverage of this study. You're not saying we have proved that music does not increase intelligence. You're saying that it has yet to be demonstrated that it does, right?
Right.
And this is an important distinction.
This is super, super important. So just like in the legal system where someone is innocent until proven guilty, scientific findings are presumed to not be there until you find evidence for them. So when you find someone not guilty, you're really saying you failed to show any evidence that they are guilty.
Right.
Similarly, in science, we start with an assumption of a null hypothesis. That means we assume there's no effect. And then if we fail to find evidence for that effect, it could be because in the population in the real world, there is no effect. But it could also be that, you know, your experiment wasn't good enough. Maybe you tested the wrong kind of training. Maybe it wasn't long enough. And if any of the listeners are interested in seeing how we respond to all of those things, I do encourage folks to take a look at the actual paper we wrote itself, which is open access and is available from the journal PLOS ONE.
And again, we've provided a link, or very shortly we will be providing a link at radioboston.org.
Yeah, excellent. So the important thing is that, you know, we are not making a claim in support of the null hypothesis. What we are saying is that when you review the experimental evidence that's out there, so the five previous studies and our sixth and seventh studies, the overall conclusion that I'm sort of drawing is it's really too soon to make strong claims about music makes you smarter. We need to be really cautious about that type of claim because the seven studies that have been done, you know, since last week just don't have any overall positive conclusion to draw from them.
And one of the reasons this is important, and you've suggested this yourself in a piece, I believe it was in the New York Times, you suggested that all of this matters because of the way we advocate for arts in our society. And it's better to base this on what we actually know rather than on what we wish to be, right?
Absolutely. So I think, and before I say this, I should make it totally clear that this is not a scientific claim I'm about to make. So the paper that we published in the journal PLOS ONE is a scientific paper that, talks about our experimental evidence and what we think it means. But what it means for arts advocacy is a moralistic claim. That's a separate topic. And I'm happy to weigh in on it because I actually feel strongly about this stuff as I wrote in the Times and as I've tried to get the message out. I think it's absolutely important that we get the message out that music is important in its own right, that music has obvious benefits in children's education, things like musical skills themselves, things like the cultural history of music. And I don't think there's any reason that we should advocate for music education for children on any other basis than its intrinsic benefits. Mm.
Well, let's take a couple of calls. 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. We're talking with Samuel Mayer. He's a doctoral student at the Harvard Graduate School of Education, and he's just completed a couple of studies with his colleagues that pretty much concludes we don't know yet. There is no evidence yet to suggest that music increases intelligence. What do you think about that? What questions do you have for Sam? Give us a call. So let's go to Cameron, who's calling from Taunton. Hi, Cameron. You're on the air.
Actually, this is Cameron from Taunton. How are you today?
Very, very well, Cameron from Taunton. Good to have you. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm a classically trained musician, been doing it for about, say, 35 years. Music is very important to my family as well. And I think just like athletes and such, you see physiological changes with people who engage in music. My mother, for instance, learned to sing and read music before she learned to read, and she can sight read organ music, you know, two hands, two feet. And as a percussionist, my fast twitch and reflexes in my hands are more quick. I'm sorry, bad language there. Are quicker than, say, a baseline average person. I've heard that one of the physiological differences that happens is because there's both mathematics and art associated with music, and learning to play and sing music is that the connections between the right and left hemisphere are increased. And I would like to see some sort of study where skills that rely on those increased connections between the right and left.
Got it, Cameron. I'm really glad you put this on the table. Sam Mayer, as you sort of look through the literature and the studies, I mean, do you want to respond to Cameron in any way?
So, yeah, the first thing is that he's absolutely right that there are physiological differences that arise from a causal effect of music lessons. So when we say, you know, when I say that we reviewed the causal literature, the randomized trials, I'm talking specifically about randomized trials that looked at non-musical cognitive benefits. So I'm leaving out randomized trials that show that very intuitively children who get music lessons actually get better at music, which is a good thing to know, but a pretty intuitive one. Another randomized trial that showed a positive effect is on exactly the topic that the caller brings up. It is true that if you take instrumental music lessons, your fine motor skills do get better, which is an intuitive finding. That's a paper by Eugenia Costajomi, and is actually from one of the same studies that looked at intelligence. One of the null results from her study was an overall intelligence benefit, but one of the positive results was that, yes, the children who had piano lessons did have better fine motor skills. I think that that benefit sort of falls into the category of the very clear intuitive findings, intuitive effects of music lessons that are totally believable and are well shown in the literature.
Cameron, thanks for bringing that up. Let's go to Tim. He's calling from Cambridge. Hi, Tim. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I guess this is sort of borders on that last question. I've been playing a trap set drums for about 50 years, you know, professionally. So I play a lot. I still practice every day. And everybody says, well, this must be amazing for your brain to be able to coordinate your four limbs all at the same time. And I can visualize what I'm playing in my head without even doing it at this point. And I'm just wondering, is there a connection between not fine motor skills, but being able to sort of navigate all your limbs at the same time? Does that do anything for your cognitive skills or anything in your brain?
So any connection between, coordinating all these limbs and other cognitive functions?
So I don't know of a study that looks specifically at visual imagery. You might expect that type of intense training to generalize there are parallels with visual imagery and spatial cognition. So, you know, one of the tasks that we used in our study involved a child navigating through a room, which involves, you know, mental rotation and dealing with a symbolic map. But this isn't after the type of experience that the caller described, which is, you know, many, many years of playing drums intensely. In fact, I should address that concern directly because, you know, one of the common criticisms of our study has been, well, you only gave them 6 weeks of lessons and it wasn't that intense. And that criticism is totally justified and we agree with it. And the fact is when you run randomized trials, these are logistically complicated and expensive studies to run. So, you know, you run as long as you can. And we did 6 weeks because we did 6 weeks. But I think there are probably, you know, clear, you know, benefits in terms of perseverance and practice for long-term extensive study of a musical instrument, like our drummer here has pointed out. And the fact is that nobody's really studied those.
Speaking of that, and I wanted to ask you about that criticism about your study only lasted 6 weeks. Are you itching to do this study for a longer period of time? And if the resources and the wherewithal was there to do it?
I mean, if the resources were there, I think it would be a very interesting study to do simply because nobody's done, you know, the type of really long-term study that would allow for a clear, you know, sort of solution to this question, which I just don't think there is yet. I'd love to see a study that starts at age zero and, you know, randomly assigns families to get tons and tons of music training or maybe tons and tons of arts training instead and to follow them for 5 years and then to stop the training and follow up again each year after that and see how long any benefits that are found persist. Mm-hmm. You know, none of the five studies that have been done so far address something called a sleeper effect. You know, so it could be that we don't actually know this when we address this in the paper, but it could be that 6 weeks of training does have fabulous benefits, but they just haven't appeared yet.
Sure.
We have no way of knowing that.
Let's take a couple more calls. Dave is calling from Woonsocket. Hi, Dave. You're on the air.
Hi. Nice to be with you.
Good to have you. What's on your mind?
I wanted to relate an anecdotal experience that I had in this vein. About 12 years ago, I joined a very technical healthcare economics company, a startup, and maybe about 6 or 8 years ago, we had an off-site meeting, and by that time we had grown to about 80 people, and among the 80, there was probably a good 20% that had PhDs in various fields of economics, and there were physicians, there were just a wide variety of highly technical, highly intelligent people. And during a break, we were standing around a grand piano in the lobby, and I casually mentioned that I had had piano lessons for several years as a child, and everybody standing there had also had piano lessons for several years as children. And when we went back into the wider group of these 90 or by that time 90 or so people who were all very highly technical scientists, college professors, graduate school professors, actually. And I just asked the whole group, how many of you had piano lessons? And of the 90, more than 80 hands went up.
Dave, it's a great anecdote, and it gets to this sort of effort, Sam Mayer, about untangling cause from correlation. But what do you hear in Dave's story?
I mean, I think that's a pretty typical, a fairly typical story. I mean, you know, I'm in academia as well, and I suspect that if I asked 90 of the people who work in William James Hall at Harvard, that a good 80 of them would probably also have done lessons as children. But the fact is that doesn't tell us that music makes children smarter. All it tells us is that music lessons are associated with other intellectual things. And the most obvious one to me is that in order to end up at the type of high-level company that the caller referred to, in upper levels of academia, you often have all kinds of benefits. You often have more time to spend on leisure activities. You often have, you know, people who encourage you to pursue artistic or intellectual, you know, endeavors. And all of those things, I think, can contribute to participating in lessons and valuing music. But I don't necessarily agree that there might be a causal link there.
Mm. Sam, I understand that you're a graduate of the Eastman School of Music, so I'm assuming that you value musical education. So, you know, if not, we're not going to study music because it's proved to make us smarter. What's the best argument for continuing music education in our schools?
I think the strongest argument here is that we should teach music because it is a fundamental part of what makes us human. It is something that brings joy and cultural understanding to every child and every adult that that is given a chance to participate in positive and you know well constructed music lessons. I think that the idea of justifying it on extrinsic basis is pretty dangerous. You know, the idea of justifying music on these extrinsic basis is quite new. You know, the Mozart effect studies were only in 1993, and this whole idea of music makes you smarter is only that old, and arts advocates haven't really been using it for any longer than that time. And the last 20 years or so has been the same period of time in which arts funding has decreased like crazy. That's not a causal claim, but you know, I really think it's a much more valuable and sort of forward-looking tack to advocate for music on its own benefits.
All right. That's Sam Mayer. He's a doctoral student at the Harvard Graduate School of Education. You can find a link to the study that we've been talking about at radioboston.org. And if you didn't get a chance to join the conversation, put a comment up at radioboston.org. And thanks to all of you who called. And Sam Mayer, thank you so much for coming in. Really
thanks for having me.
Yeah, real pleasure. Listeners, there's a lot more ahead. Stay with us. I'm Anthony Brooks with Sasha Pfeiffer. This is Radio Boston.